With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of the Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play the Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry, we were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Jones. Bowden. He's got it.
Hello and welcome to the Analyst Inside Cricket. I'm getting slight withdrawal symptoms actually with no IPL on, although I know the Pakistan Super League's been on actually over the last few days, but I haven't been watching that. I've been planning for this programme instead, and we've got a very interesting show for you today because we've got a special guest, Daryl Mitchell from the Professional Cricketers Association, the chairman indeed of the PCA. We're also going to talk about player welfare generally because it's been announced today that the county players have had to accept a bit of a reduction in pay and some of them have been furloughed. So we'll look at all that issue, what's happening to the players over the winter. We should just also mention our virtual cricket club, which is it's raising money for the Professional Cricketers Association, or at least the Cricketers Trust, which is the charity that supports players who've fallen on hard times. Tomorrow night we have both Jack Leach and Sophie Eccleston, so it's a real left-arm spinner's masterclass, the best female and male left-arm spinner in the land on our show. It's 7 p.m. tomorrow night. If you go to worldsbestcricketclub.com, you can join us. It's £6 for a month, but much of that money goes to the Cricketers Trust. I should just mention the beer as well. We're supported by beer52.com, and we're going to be tasting the beers, the craft beers from Beer 52, during our virtual cricket club show tomorrow night. I've got two in front of me here, actually. One that I tried last week, cold-blooded, cold-steep porter from the Siren Brewery in Berkshire, which has got a lovely dark red can and a lovely dark colour. And this one I'm trying tomorrow for my sins is called the Dark Druid Chocolate Orange Pastry Stout from County Sligo in Ireland. So I'm looking forward to trying that. And you can get 8 free beers from beer52.com. If you go to beer52.com/cricket, you get 8 free craft beers for just £5.95 for the postage. And you can join us with tasting those beers tomorrow night, Thursday night, in the virtual cricket club. Daryl, you're there with us, and so is Simon Mann. Simon, have you got withdrawal symptoms about the IPL not being on our screens?
Well, there's another one coming up in about 4 months' time, so I think I can wait until that happens. England are in South Africa. Looking forward to that. Just while you're plugging the beer, Yoz, you only brought around one bottle and one can when you came to my house a couple of weeks ago. So you've got all the beer. Where is mine? You say we're going to be drinking it tomorrow night and sampling it on the virtual live cricket club. Where is mine?
Well, you haven't signed up, have you? If you sign up to beer52.com/cricket, you can get your free case and then you can taste it with me. Anyway, that's a fair question, actually. I'll try and do my best to get you some more. Right, so Daryl Mitchell,
hello.
Chairman of the PCA, hello. Well, for a start, look back at the summer. Worcestershire nearly got to the Bob Willis Trophy finals.
Yeah, we had a great run in the Red Bull Comp, actually. Sort of a a very different year to the previous couple, really. Obviously, we were disappointed in our Red Bull cricket back in 2019. Seems a lifetime ago now. But worked very hard in the winter as a group, kept things very simple, looked to bat long periods of time, and then with the ball, looked to hit top of off for long periods of time. It sounds oversimple, but that was basically our sort of motto going through the competition. And we played some really good cricket. Unfortunately, just fell at the last hurdle, really, against a very good Somerset side in the last game of the group stages, where I think we fell about 50 or 60 runs short, where a win would have took us to the final, unfortunately. But it was a good competition, and lots of positives to be taken forward into hopefully a fuller programme of Red Bull cricket next year.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose that the one thing about playing for Worcestershire is that you never quite know what the state of your ground is going to be. And I suppose the one small advantage about the lockdown and no cricket in, well, sort of April, May, was that you weren't dealing with a flooded ground, which often happens, doesn't it, early season. What's the state of the ground now?
It looks an absolute picture at the moment. A lot can happen over the next couple of months, particularly the winter months, in terms of quantity of water that comes down, I think. But actually, the postponement of the start of the season worked in the groundsman's favour, certainly, if nobody else's, at Worcester. With we did have some heavy flooding in the, it was underwater for about 12 weeks, I think, which is extraordinary, in fact. But so it was going to be a race against time to get it ready for the first home game. Whether we'd have ended up at Kidderminster or not, I'm not sure. But it gave a little bit more time, and thankfully it was very much playable when we did kick off in August. That was for sure.
How do you combine, Darryl, being a player, playing for Worcestershire full time, and being chairman of the PCA? I mean, it almost seems to me that they are two jobs that should be done separately, and you're able to combine them. I mean, is that a really demanding role for you?
Yeah, it can be. I think from my own personal perspective, I'm quite good at sort of compartmentalising things. I don't know if even that's a word, but it's sort of same as when I was captain. I think sort of separating my batting and captaincy is sort of how I see the job as PCA chairman and playing. You sort of separate the two. As soon as I cross that white line, whether it's training or playing, that I'm very much Darryl Mitchell, the cricketer. And the emails and phone calls, etc., can wait till after play, I guess, or on the days off. I think over the course of it's about 3.5 years now I've been chairman. I think it's, in some ways, it's probably been the most difficult period ever to be PCA chairman in terms of a time management point of view. There seems to have been so much going on with, whether it's the county partnership agreement, whether it's a new standard contract, obviously the advent of the 100 coming in, and then COVID. It's been demanding, but I guess from an experience point of view, it's been probably the best time ever. I've learnt so much. It's been great to be involved in something that will certainly shape my future and life beyond cricket. So I'm very grateful for the opportunity I've had.
Has your phone sort of been ringing constantly since the end of the season? Players worried about their futures, worried about their finances, worried about their mental health. What's the current situation?
Yeah, I mean, we've just renegotiated another sort of pay cut deal until the end of February, which gives some clarity over the winter. So I think that's a real, real positive. My phone's been red hot from the start of lockdown, really, right through, to be perfectly honest. Obviously, there's a lot of uncertainty around, and that uncertainty just breeds anxiety amongst players, as it would people in any industry, I guess. So it's been a tough time dealing with all the unknowns of COVID-19. I guess there's still many unknowns moving forward. But some clarity around the pay situation, I think, is important until February. Obviously, I think we managed this year well in terms of the number of players lost to the game. I think we only lost 41 players either retired or released at the end of this year.
How would that compare with a normal season?
An average year is 45, so we're actually down, which is amazing, really. I think we put a lot of things in place. Obviously, the pay cuts is the obvious one, but also being able to roll over rookie contracts for an extra year than previously within the regulations. Academy contracts can be rolled over for an extra year. I think that's helped. Reduction of minimum salaries for young players. So I think that's helped keep a few in jobs, as well as actually in some cases allowing sort of a 7-month contract for those that are off doing other things or can go off and do other things in the winters as well, rather than the standard sort of 12-month contract. So I think that's enabled to keep the majority of players in the game. But I certainly don't think we're out of the woods yet, obviously, with the extension of rookies and academies. That means there's not so many players coming at the bottom end. So I think the overall total number of players will probably still be down slightly on this year. And there is obviously going to be a knock-on effect financially for all the clubs' budgets moving forward off the back of the situation we're in at the moment.
Mm. Actually, a big compliment to you is that you told us before we started this that you've got a whiteboard on your wall, and that is your sort of go-to kind of item, really, that you couldn't do without. And I'm just really impressed because, you know, in my day, I mean, players didn't even have a diary. Trying to get people to events was a nightmare. You basically had to knock them up, you know, to go round to their house and get them to do things. If you tried phoning them, it was pointless, probably in the days before mobiles or when mobiles were a bit primitive. But, I mean, you to have that level of organisation, but then I suppose you can't do it without, in a way.
Yeah, certainly. I think it's been a necessity, really, that kind of thing. Obviously, I've become very acquainted with Zoom over the last 6 to 9 months.
So what's on your whiteboard now, I mean, that you could tell us? I mean, a couple of things that you've, you know, pending.
A couple of things around commercially, around the cricket department, the PCA. MVP is something that we run, so there's some work to be doing on revamping that. We're actually taking on 40 new women members as of now, pretty much. Their contracts are out being signed as we speak. So domestic players are coming on board as PCA members, and it's 8 regions with 5 professionals at each region. So we've got a big call with them in the next week or two. So I've got to write a bit of a welcome speech and stuff for the Zoom call with those guys. So that's on the to-do list.
And you've got this Futures conference, or at least a sort of Futures list of events or list of conversations planned as well. Talk us about that. How does that work? What is that about?
Yep, so this is the Future series is sort of ongoing as we speak, actually, through the month of November. There's various sort of online sort of webinars the personal development and welfare team are putting on, guest speakers from various industries. But just as a bit of a taste, I guess, we've got a networking in person and digitally sort of seminar that's going on tomorrow lunchtime, which is good for all the members to be able to tap into. Building a digital presence is another webinar. Entering the world of coaching, entering the world of business development and sales, entering the world of financial services, and there's another probably half a dozen or so more that I could have listed off.
So this is all for players looking ahead to the day when they won't be able to play professional cricket anymore, and kind of giving them some training and some direction into how they can live their life, which, I mean, again, something that we never had. I mean, we were sort of September the 30th, handed our P45, handed our car keys back, the sponsored car, and that was it. See you in April. And no real sort of future planning or what you can do in the winter or education of any kind. So you're trying to create, I suppose, much more rounded cricketers in a way.
Yeah, absolutely. I think where we see a lot of the issues in the game or within players, sorry, is transition out effectively. So it's important to get things in place for life beyond cricket. And the average age of a cricketer to retire or be released is 26. And obviously there's a hell of a lot of your working life beyond that, isn't there? So trying to put things in place. We normally have a transition week and a futures conference, which is part of that, which is sort of obviously a hands-on interactive thing. I think we used St George's Park last year for that. Obviously, that's impossible at the moment. So the Futures series is something we come up with this week to try and do everything online, try and give people as much exposure to different things as well. Some former players telling their transition stories is a really important part of that as well. And just try and prepare people as best we can to avoid the pitfalls of that transition out of the game. And mental health, I'm sure, is something we'll come on to later, but that is something that some of the biggest issues in players tends to be those first 2 years outside of the game.
At what point do players start planning for their futures? It's probably quite a general question, a hard one to answer, really. But has that changed? Have you noticed that players are thinking a bit earlier about what's going to happen after cricket in recent years?
Yeah, absolutely. So our personal development managers, there's 6 of those with 3 counties each, and an England women's personal PDM as well. But so they will get into academies. So as early as sort of that 16, 17, 18, before they're even actually officially sort of members and professionals. But and this is drummed into them at a very young age. Whether they listen at that point is probably debatable. Some of them certainly do, but some of them don't. But in terms of the opportunity to tap into the PCA sort of education funding, that is available to all members from first year pros right until the to the older people like myself, and just the encouragement and trying to source those courses for people to take, the areas they're interested in, and trying to forge that future, what life beyond cricket looks like from a very early. I think there's no hard and fast rule. I think the earlier the better, but people certainly take to it at different times. But the encouragement, the opportunity is certainly there throughout.
Have you noticed, have you found that there are more players have been calling the PCA since the COVID pandemic started, or has it been actually a feature of the fact that PCA has got procedures in place now to help with the players' mental health? Actually, it's been a feature of the last 2, 3, 4, 5 years.
Yeah, I mean, I think you sort of you create a little bit of a monster sometimes by the more awareness you raise, effectively, and the better the provision you give, the more cases tend to come forward, I think, which is obviously, from our point of view, is a positive. We want to help as many members as we possibly can. I think during this phase in particular, at the first lockdown, mental health cases in particular actually dropped, which was a bit of a surprise to us at that point, because we thought there was going to be an inevitable spike. Unfortunately, that was probably a little bit of a calm before the storm. Once they sort of settled down into those sort of months, 6 weeks into lockdown, we saw a pretty steep rise in mental health cases, people reaching out to the PCA, people ringing the confidential helpline. And as of the end of last month, I think we'd already gone past the year in terms of number of cases. We'd already gone past the total number of cases that we had in 2018 with a couple of months to go. So of this year. So there's certainly been a sort of a tap into our resources, in particular the charity's resources in terms of the mental health provisions. And it's probably come at a time where obviously fundraising and the generating the revenue is probably at its most difficult at the moment.
Yeah, that's partly why we introduced this virtual cricket club, actually, to try and help at least partly offset the losses. I've got a little sad story here, actually. We were putting together the next issue of the Cricketer magazine today. It goes to press tonight, actually. And one of the items in it is an obituary of Graham Cowdery, who, of course, died only about a week ago, very sadly, aged only 56. And I'm just going to give you a tiny little peek into this beautifully written obituary, actually, by Mark Purnell of Kent. And he says, talking of Graham's sort of later life, he says, around Christmas 2008, Cowdery, who'd had a minor heart attack, his family idyll was shattered, forced to close his corporate entertainment firm after a business partner allegedly made off with £40,000. He and his wife, Justine, a successful amateur jockey, separated, leaving Cowdery destitute. Suffering from depression, he spent occasional nights sleeping in his car before friends and family rallied. His fortunes improved in 2015 when the ECB employed him as a pitch liaison officer, etc., etc. So the general point, I mean, being that, you know, he obviously, even though you'd assume that a Cowdery from that great cricketing family would be okay, it you can make assumptions about anybody that their life is fine, and actually it's not. So what sorts of issues are you hearing from players that they're worrying about and that is affecting their mental health?
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously just listening to you read that, it's obviously as a trustee of the Cricketers Trust, it's unfortunately it's an all too sort of familiar tale, really. It's something that we come across on a regular basis, and we help out where we can. I think in terms of the mental health, there is an element of depression. I touched on the transition being an issue earlier, but it's not limited to that, certainly. I mean, ex-cricketers are human beings. At the end of the day, we're no different to anybody else, and the pitfalls that life throws at us. So, I mean, the PCT deals with anything from a one-off phone call, just somebody to talk to, which can sort that, hopefully put an end to the issues there and then, or more so to a sort of residential, funding a residential sort of rehab situation where people need sort of long-term treatment. And then we've had former players that have been in the system for years and need that constant help. So, and obviously there's anything in between there. So there really is no sort of boundaries to the care and what we try and help with. Obviously, the only sort of, I guess, the only limitation really is the funding side of it and what we can afford to do.
Well, what's the reach of the PCA, Daryl? I mean, you obviously got your current members. I mean, can you stay a member of the PCA for life? I mean, are you talking about hundreds and hundreds of members that can call on your resources?
Yeah, absolutely. I think once you've played one professional game or signed one professional contract, you're then a member of the PCA for life. I think there's somewhere with the new women professionals coming on board now, I think it's around 480 current members. There's roughly around 5,000 past playing members that we are aware of. There might be more out there that we don't know about, but that's the numbers we're sort of dealing with, like you say. And anyone, once you've played one game, whether you play one game or 100 tests, you're a PCA member and you're treated equally and accordingly. And our services are there for everyone to tap into.
And do you find that there's someone, you know, who might have drifted out of the game 15, 20 years ago that comes to you possibly as a last resort?
Yeah, I mean, it's far more than the mental health that the PCT provides. And I remember going back a few years when I was obviously involved as captain at Worcester, the PCT, it was benevolent fund as it was then, put a chairlift in for Tom Graveney, for example, to help him with mobility, getting up and down stairs. And there is, like I say, sort of no bounds really. We actually own a couple of mobility scooters that get sort of lent out at times when they're needed, those kind of things. And and then right down to your 18 year old professional in their first year who develops some sort of mental health issue or addiction or whatever it might be, we'll be there and try and lend our support as best we possibly can.
It must have opened your eyes in a way. I mean, when you set out on a cricketing career, you started in 2005, so you've been at it 15 years. I mean, you know, you think of the excitement of playing the game and just doing it almost for fun, really, when you start. And suddenly you're knee-deep in all these issues. I suppose it must be quite hard to sort of reflect back on what your life was like as a young player. But it seems as if there's more complexity to being a professional cricketer now than there was when you started.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think as a youngster, all you're worried about is the next game, isn't it, or the next training session. I don't think you look any further than that. Whereas you sort of get to the end of your career, like me, I've sort of certainly looking to life beyond cricket. I'm nearly 37 now, so there's not too many runs left in the tank. Hopefully a few more, but not many.
Well, you had an all right season this year, average 42.
Yeah, had a good year this year, and hopefully that can continue into next. But it's only right that you plan and look to life beyond cricket. And obviously, I think being a trustee on the PCT is something that is really opened my eyes to the issues that can happen to players, particularly in those sort of first couple of years out of the game. There's guys I've played against, guys I've played with, actually Ashes winners, that are all in the system that have fallen on hard times and needed some help. So being aware of those certainly give me a broader perspective on life and what can happen once that the thing that you've sort of grown up loving and wanting to do your whole career, once that sort of ends. It's sort of an end, certainly an end of an era, if nothing else. But there's a lot of life to be led after your playing days, and you need to move on into something else, and you need to put things in place and make sure that transition is as smooth as possible.
What would you say to a young player coming into the game now as the most important thing, or one of the most important things to have in the background? I suppose, would it be having a second interest, perhaps?
Yes, certainly. I have found that sort of having things going on outside of cricket is certainly helped my performance on the field, actually. And I think it's good to be able to go away from the ground and do other things, have other interests, take your mind off the cricket. I mean, it can, if you let it, cricket and your career can certainly be all-consuming, and I don't think that's necessarily a healthy thing at times. So having, putting things in place, whether it's some sort of work experience or some sort of educational course, things that you can go and do away from the cricket, get yourself away from the game, switch off from batting averages and bowling averages and economy rates and that kind of thing, take your mind off it and worry about something else for a period of time, and then attack the next training session or the next game with 100% commitment and energy. I think that can only be a good thing.
Here's a thought. In the past, Josh, I mean, you mentioned that you got to the end of September and you had to think about your winter plans and you did something else. So you were away from the game. And in a strange way, I suppose, to some extent, you were planning for the future because you might be developing a skill, you might do something completely different. In a strange way now, of course, you've got a year-long contract and players are successful, just keep on getting their contracts renewed, 2 years, 3 years. So you are totally, in a way...
tied into it more.
More totally immersed in cricket now. So actually, when you come to the end of your career, it might feel a bigger shock than it did in your
day. That's a really good point. I use cricket as a means to travel. one of my books, actually, Yakking Around the World, A Cricketer's Quest for Love and Utopia. It's a pretty stupid title, rather pretentious title.
Still available in all bad bookshops.
It is. I just noticed it the other day, actually, for £2, remained somewhere. But
There's no bad bookshop. All bookshops are good.
No, that's true. And actually, there's a new venture called bookshop.org, which is trying to support independent bookshops, trying to take all the business away from Amazon. So try and support that, actually, if you're not a fan of monopolies. Bookshop.org. It's a new company come from America that is trying to help those independent bookshops surviving. So have a look at that. But I tried to use cricket as a means to travel and see the world. And I felt, it was fun. It was great going to Australia and South Africa and New Zealand and West Indies and India and Sri Lanka and places like that. But also it opened your eyes to another way of living, to other kind of styles of playing the game, other kind of attitudes to life, so it was a brilliant, travel broadens a mind, doesn't it? So I suppose that was my kind of exterior or external experience, which I guess in the end fed into sort of journalism. I'm pleased, actually, in some ways that I had that opportunity, but it was quite unsettling because you never knew really from 1 year to the next how solid that contract with an overseas club would be, how much it would pay, what you'd be doing. Sometimes I might be away working at a local newspaper doing a bit of work, and other times it was like kind of scrabbing around, working in a shop or something. So, you didn't have a particularly consistent form of employment in the winter, which in itself could be a little bit unsettling, but at the same time it was a great opportunity. Now, yeah, they are much more tied into sort of by November time. Daryl, you're sort of reporting back for training again, aren't you?
Normally, obviously, I think they've taken, most counties have taken advantage of the furlough system this year. So most players are furloughed at the moment. The travel and things, like you say, still goes on. A lot of young players still jet off to Australia, New Zealand, South Africa, etc. to play club cricket and get that life experience. And it's certainly development. Develops your skills, certainly talking from personal experience, certainly develops your skills and your outlook on life. For many, many lads, it's that first sort of time they ever left home, and to go and live 10,000 miles away for 6 months in Australia is certainly character building and definitely helps your cricket, the way the Aussies go about their cricket as well. It certainly firms you up a bit, or it did in my case.
Actually, and some people say that another aspect of that is it gives you the experience of being the professional in a club side, whereas in England, in a county side, you're one of 11 pros, and you're all sort of trying together to obviously get well, do well. But in a club side in Australia or New Zealand or somewhere, you are the professional, so you have much more responsibility.
Yeah, the pressure that sort of expectation, and you are supposed to perform and do well, aren't you? And that sort of expectation, the pressure that brings is something that you learn and you have to deal with. So I think that's certainly, again, that's an element of character building with that. But I suppose at now you're doing that with a 12-month contract behind you, you're still being paid by your county during that period. And so the security is certainly there. I think if there is any positives to come out of COVID, and I think there's very few, isn't there? But with the players that have been furloughed, it has given players time on their hands. It has enabled them to access our services even more, particularly the educational ones and more online courses. And the personal development managers have been checking in with everyone on a one-to-one basis pretty regularly and encouraging them to take up the opportunities they have. So that we've seen a lot of players, whether it be a podcast or doing some creative writing or reporting or or taken up sort of formal qualifications. We've seen a big uptake in that, which has been a positive actually, and one of the very few to come out of the horrible situation.
Yeah, that's a good point, and it forces you to either invent or, in our cases, Simon, reinvent. And I think actually the most successful people and the most successful sports are those that are constantly innovating. I quite like the idea of the Big Bash, that now they've introduced the idea of substitutes. You can substitute a player. What do you feel about that?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not averse. I'm not one that I don't fear change, certainly. Obviously, that one of those the substitution thing came up in the discussions around the 100 at one point, didn't it, as well?
Yeah.
I remember reading and hearing around that. So, I mean, I'm not averse to it. If they think it's going to add something to the competition, then great. Obviously, things like timeouts have come in, haven't they, in the IPL in particular. I'm not sure whether that's a good thing that a 20-over game lasts four and a half hours or whatever it does now, but... Yeah, I mean, there's various sort of innovation. I mean, cricket's innovated from year one, isn't it? If you go back from when I was a kid, the sort of pyjama cricket coming in and coloured clothing, that was never seen before. And that came in various formats that we've had in terms of 40-over, 45-over, 50-over, 55-over, 20-over, and now obviously the 100. So 10-over, T10 as well. So cricket is one of those games that has evolved a lot over the years, isn't it? And yeah, I mean, it'd be interesting to see how it works.
Yeah, we've opened up a can of worms here, Yoz. I mean, it's absolutely. I mean, it's a fascinating discussion. We could talk about it all afternoon. But I mean, you know, 1728, someone decided that we put three sticks in the ground and bowl a piece of leather at someone's body or whatever. And then
it was only two sticks. It was only two sticks in 1728. Sticks, okay. 1775, okay. Don't test me on the history here. In 1775, they added a third stump because there was a guy called John Small.
What gimmick?
Yeah, gimmick. They couldn't get a bloke out. There was a guy called John Small who decided to play straight bat rather than cross bat. Everyone else was cross bat, and he played straight bat, and they couldn't get him out because they only had two stumps. Yeah. The ball often would go in between them, so they put a third one in.
See, that's fascinating, isn't it? Because it's about the game evolving. I mean, I've had a lot of comment on this in the last few days, actually. You know, people saying, oh, it's just a gimmick, you know, it's ridiculous. But the game has always evolved. I mean, that is a very good example. You know, back in the 18th century, also, things like, you know, football and rugby, they've had substitutes for ages. It's really weird in a way why cricket has never had substitutes. I go back to, a recent example, when Jimmy Anderson got injured at Edgbaston on the first morning of the Ashes test last year. So England basically had to play, you know, the best part of 5 days with only 10 players. I know Anderson could bat, but that's an irrelevance, really, because that's not what he's there for. And, you know, it does seem odd in a way that cricket has been very resistant to substitutes.
It has happened before, hasn't it? I remember... Vikram Solanke, who obviously I was playing with at the time, became England's first super sub in the 50-over competition. I can't remember what competition it was or whether it was just a
one-day
ODI series. It's not as if it hasn't happened before either. Obviously, it was deemed not to be a success at that point. So whether it's any different in T20 cricket, I'd be amazed to be seen.
Well, I think the reason it wasn't a success then was because you could have players substituted basically after the toss or after the first over. This, I understand, has to be after the halfway point. Is it of the first innings or the second innings?
It's the 11th over, and also it can't be a person who's already batted.
Yeah.
So you can substitute someone who hasn't batted or someone who's only bowled one over.
One over, yeah. Anyway, let's see what happens. It may not work, but I mean, what's wrong with having a look at something and then saying no, it didn't work. Let's try something different. I mean, I think one of the big problems actually with the Big Bash is that it was a great success, and then they expanded the tournament, and so the games lost their sort of sense of being special. So there were almost too many games, which is of course a big issue that cricket faces. I think generally is that it's overplaying and people think, okay, that event is not special, but I think originally, you had that real sense that each game really mattered, and then it was just, oh, there's another game at the Belrive Oval tonight, oh, there's another one next Tuesday, oh, there's another one next Thursday, there's another one next, week on Saturday, and so we might not go, we might not give it our attention, but
anyway, that's the debate about cricket's finances.
Talking of new competitions. So, is your mailbag, Darrell, regularly filled with people complaining about the 100? And how can you tell them to shut up?
It was for a period. I think it's a sort of I actually played in the 100 warm-up games, and from a cricketing perspective, the skill set is identical to a T20. It was no different. I think it gets lost a little bit that if it wasn't the 100, then there would have been another T20 competition, which I in my opinion is probably overkill to have two domestic T20 competitions in one country. And it would have been, I think most people's problem is not the fact that with the format, really. I think it's the fact that it's not their county. It's not your Worcestershire, your Somerset, your Yorkshire, etc. And it's these city-based teams. And I think that's what most people take umbrage, is that their county will not be participating in this new competition.
Although their players will be. I mean, it's going to take time for people to get allegiance. But, you know, I've written this book about the IPL, and, you know, a lot of people sort of wondering how the hell people would get allegiance to the new teams in that. Obviously, there's a bigger market in India, but the allegiances were created by a playing style, by certain individuals. You know, people love to go and watch Kohli or Dhoni or Suresh Raina or whoever. I mean, they had their heroes within a team, and that can draw people to watch a sport just as much as affiliation to a team.
I think having a Moeen Ali, born and bred in Birmingham, playing for the Birmingham side, I think will be a real pull, and people will want to go and see Moeen represent his city at Edgbaston. So yeah, it remains to be. I'm going to sit very much on the fence, and I hope it's a success. But I guess it remains to be seen, and ultimately it will come down to people in the stadium, I think, whether it's viewed as a success or not.
What a beautiful segue into a clip of Moeen Ali. He gave a little interview today on the back of England announcing that they're going to be touring Pakistan for two T20s next winter, next October, just before, actually, the World T20, scheduled for the late October in India. And it sounds really sensible, actually, not only helping Pakistan, you know, revitalise their cricketing audience with two matches against England, but also practice for the World T20 a couple of weeks later. And this is Moeen talking about that idea.
Yeah, it's massive. You know, having just been there not so long ago, it was an amazing experience to play the PSL there. And I'm sure Pakistan have gone all out to host that. And we can't wait to go there in the future. And I think it's a massive moment for cricket going forward. The teams that came over, West Indies and Pakistan last year, were amazing to have gone through the whole bubble. And obviously after the coronavirus, the pandemic and all those news, that cricket was obviously on the edge, and they helped massively with that. So I think it was probably going to happen anyway. But I think it's right that we go back after such a long time to one for the game itself, but also for Pakistan and the cricket in that country. My priority is to try and get my game to the level that I know I can get it, first of all, so I can be part of a lot of the cricket that's coming up. I know I haven't got that long left, I guess, in international cricket, probably, obviously depending on fitness and form, but I'll try my best to do as much as I can to get on to the level now where I want to get. I think I've had enough of a break, I guess, from Test cricket, or just I think I can give my all in the next couple of years to try and be part of this, because there's so much cricket and there's so much success to have. There's an opportunity there, I think, to be one of the greatest sides ever and be part of that. So and that's something I want to do, and it's such an exciting time moving forward that I think for me right now is to try and play as much cricket as I can. Looking back at that 50 over World Cup, I think I got dropped after the Pakistan game. I got like 3 for 50, and then I got dropped because the ground we played at Cardiff and it was small, and we always most of the time play one spinner and stuff. But I want to get to a point where I'm playing so well that my batting is well and my bowling is going well that I don't get dropped no matter what the size of ground.
So that's Mo and Ali just talking about the prospects for the next few months. Exciting stuff. England playing South Africa, of course, starting on the 27th of November. For you, Daryl, what about, you talked about future planning. Now, we don't want to write your career off yet, of course, because you had a good summer. But what about you, sort of medium term? Have you got any plans?
Yeah. I mean, my sort of outlook originally was coaching. I've done a level three coach, but I think this role with the PCA has changed my direction a little bit into sports administration. I've done a little bit of work experience at Everton and the RFU and Cheltenham Town in other sports as well. So yeah, I think sports administration is certainly the area that I'll be looking to move into, and we'll see what opportunities come up over in the next year or two once my career finally finishes.
So are you excited about the future, or are you apprehensive about it? You talk about players, you know, really being uncertain those 2 years after they finish. Are you thinking actually this is going to be a really positive thing when you finish playing, or are you very apprehensive?
Can you be both? I am certainly excited. I mean, cricket is obviously been a huge part of my life since I left school, effectively. So there is definitely an element of apprehension of when that disappears. I think I'll always be involved, whether that's a bit of part-time coaching at my local club or playing club cricket or whatever it might be. I think I will always have that love and that desire to be involved in cricket no matter what happens. But certainly what I've done over the last couple of years with the PCA, and I'm pretty confident with the things I have put in place, that there's a good future for me to have beyond cricket. So yeah, a bit of both. I will miss playing cricket. It's been, like I say, it's been a huge part of my life, and I've loved every minute of my career. But unfortunately, the body's probably, recovery in particular, is not quite what it was, and there will be an end at some point. And I'm quite excited of what the future holds for me as well. So yeah, it's a bit of both in there, I'd say.
Well, thank you very much for your time today, and also on behalf of everyone at the Professional Cricketers Association, thank you very much for all the effort and time you put into that job as well. It's been very well received and extremely valuable, and you make a great figurehead for that organisation. So round of applause to Daryl for his
thank you very
his
much.
Work
I appreciate
and time
that.
Today and good luck with everything. Just a couple of little things for your diary. So tomorrow night, Thursday night, we have both Jack Leach and Sophie Eccleston. So it's the first woman on our virtual club live stream. And, you know, actually, I really want to talk to her about whether she thinks she could break into men's cricket eventually, if she'd ever want to, of course. She's the world's leading T20 women bowler, female bowler, and she's been doing amazing stuff, and I certainly wouldn't like to face her, actually. So she's on with Jack Leach tomorrow night in our virtual cricket club, which you can find at worldsbestcricketclub.com. And as I said, it's £6, but you get a lot of value for your money there, with four live events per month and lots of blogs and podcasts and other things as well, including the chance to win signed memorabilia. We've got some signed pictures and stuff to give you tomorrow night to win if you answer a simple question. Worldsbestcricketclub.com. Go to that site and sign up. We look forward to seeing you. And don't forget about the beer either. Simon, the beer 52. How many cans have you got left?
None. I had two. You only brought two round.
Well, I'll try and remember to bring one round to you tomorrow then before the show, so you can sample it. Beer52.com/cricket to get those free 8 craft beers. Daryl Mitchell, thank you very much again. Simon Mann,
thank you for having me.
Thank you. And we'll speak to you guys who are part of the Virtual Cricket Club tomorrow night, Thursday night, 7 p.m. See you then. Thanks for listening.
Goodbye for now.
Podcast Network.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from, with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere, and each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.